Hello, and welcome to the Legion Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast.
My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, I'll be discussing the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics. This is Legion Spotlight number 23, and we're continuing our look at the original Legion of Superheroes comics from late 1964. Next up, from Adventure Comics 326, is Part 1, The Revolt of the Girl Legionnaires. And I gotta say, just based on the cover of this, I found this somewhat revolting, because it's, oh, the girls are going crazy, they're attacking the boys, and that's not exactly a great premise or concept, in my opinion. It's a very easy go-to kind of a one. And this first part is 8 pages. It is written by Jerry Siegel. We got art by John Forte. And we've got a fair number of Legionnaires in here. And based on how the roll call lists out most of the boys first, although it's frankly pretty, it's in alphabetical order, so it's not like it's sexist, but it does kind of come across that way. Full page interior cover, kind of repeating the stuff from the real cover of the girls. It's got like Tropico Girl taking a bazooka, it looks like, and blasting Invisible Kid's statue and whatnot, and they've already wrecked a few. So I did not go into this with high hopes, and I'll be honest, I did not come out of this first part having a changed opinion. The one thing I did find interesting with the roll call, it listed both Superboy and Supergirl, and we do have both of them in this part of the story. Now, the first page is basically Saturn Girl calling all the female Legionnaires in, and we get a couple of panels of just the basic kind of daily business or whatever of the Legionnaires. Light Lass is trying to lose some weight using a cellular trim ray. Triplicate Girl and Shrinking Violet are using the multi-synomatic to sign autographs. Supergirl was hanging out with Prody 2, who had shapeshifted into her. And we see them, but that's really the extent of Supergirl's appearance in this part. Phantom Girl was studying using the Knowledge Condensotron over at the Hall of Infinite Knowledge. And it's like, okay, we got little gadgets and stuff like that. It's basically kind of filling time to call in the Legionnaires. The guys were coming back from a mission. They got sent out to go spend a month patrolling some sector of space. And that included Ultra Boy, Mon-El, Lightning Lad, Colossal Boy, Matter Eater Lad, and Sun Boy. And the girls of Supergirl, I guess she does show up a little here on page 3. Light Lass, Phantom Girl, Tropico Girl, Shrinking Violet, and Saturn Girl have all picked the Legionnaires they're going to go destroy. And then we go and see some of that. We see Light Lass essentially seducing Element Lad and then stranding him on a mountain peak somewhere. And then we see Triplicate Girl and Shrinking Violet teaming up as Triplicate Girl seduces Invisible Kid, Brainiac 5, and Cosmic Boy individually or simultaneously, and then they shrink them down somehow and trap them literally in a wooden matchbox, because they're going to have those in the 30th century. And there was a comment they made on how there was a time delay shrink chemical or whatever on the ring she was, Triplicate Girl was giving them, and it's the same kind of chemical that causes Shrinking Violet's costume to shrink when she size shifts. Versus, again, thinking from later continuity, everybody from Shrinking Violet's planet of Ismisk, or ISMK, I don't know how to pronounce some of this stuff, I figured as the person shrank, the clothes shrank with them if they were material of that world or whatever. So we've gotten a few Legionnaires having been taken out. We've got Saturn Girl starting her plot against Superboy, and that's the end of part one. And this is 8 pages, and some stuff happens, but nothing that felt overly meaningful or whatnot. And really, I'm sure there's a twist ending in the next part. Maybe the girls have been mind-controlled or something, but there's just not a whole lot to go on other than Saturn Girl having brought them all in. I suppose she could have mentally manipulated the other female Legionnaires, although there's no sign of that. So I'm hoping the second part is able to, you know, kind of clarify and have a good twist ending or something, but so far I haven't been overly impressed by The Revolt of the Girl Legionnaires, which is a part one of a two-part from Adventure Comics 326. Next up in Adventure Comics 326 is Part 2, The Triumph of the Superheroines. Still written by Jerry Siegel and art by John Forte. 7 pages here, with about 2/3 of the first page being an interior cover of literally the female Legionnaires dancing and celebrating of having defeated the boy Legionnaires. I thought the first part was bad. This was even worse. We wind up with Saturn Girl unsurprisingly tricking Superboy to fighting a lead robot, only to uncover the kryptonite gears inside it. So she's defeated him. Supergirl deals with Chameleon Boy by convincing him to change himself into a Phantom, which means he could probably duplicate Phantom Girl's power to some degree. And then when he's in that Phantom state, spraying him with a Cancelite spray so he can't turn back. He'll always be a Phantom or whatever. Phantom Girl takes out Star Boy by luring him to another planet. They're getting attacked by this deadly plant. She convinces him to go super heavy and burrow into the ground. Now, he's apparently not wearing a flight belt because he can't unburrow, he can't fly back up. So he's trapped there. The girls all go back, we get the scene of them dancing and partying, and they get a call on the space monitor from Queen Azura, the ruler of the planet Femnaz. And they had visited there once and basically been brainwashed there without their knowing, given a post-hypnotic command to destroy their male comrades. And there's even a panel in this flashback explaining how they basically rearranged words on a tape of Superboy's voice to make him give her the post-hypnotic command, I guess in the past or something. It was bizarre. And at this point, the Queen has admitted, oh, we did a terrible wrong. I'm going to undo that command we gave you. The girls are just in tears over what they've done. They ask, why did you countermand this order? And then we get this page-long flashback on how they were in charge of their world, but the men thought combat was barbarous and all this stuff, and the women were shooting prayer rockets at the moon, and they're like, the guys are like, that's a bad idea. That could have a disastrous effect. So they get sent into space arcs and banished from the planet, and sure enough, one of the next times they're shooting off their prayer rockets, it splits the moon clean in half. I mean, literally, even halves. But Ultra Boy and Mon-El were there. They fixed the moon. They brought the men back. The women have seen all of their mistakes. And this is what led them to undoing the command to the female Legionnaires so they can go rescue the boy Legionnaires and stuff. And everybody lives happily ever after. That's it. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I guessed at the mind control there was nothing else to go on, but this was probably, almost definitely, the weakest of the stories I've read so far. And we've got a fair number of them, but this reads like a bad Saturday morning cartoon that was phoned in, complete with, I expect, a laugh track here on the final panel or whatnot. And the 7th page has a 1/3 of a page ad. It was basically 6 pages of, we've written ourselves into a corner, let's do a quick about face and everything's fine. So not a story I could recommend, which is sad and unusual because I've really been enjoying most of them up until now. But this was one that, again, the premise didn't seem promising, and the, I can't even call it a twist at the end, but the, I'm not even sure I can call it a resolution to the story, but the payoff was insufficient and not good. Final panel, though, we've got Superboy and Supergirl facing each other and stuff, and I don't know if they ever deal with the fact of Superboy knowing there is a Supergirl from, I don't know what he knows about Supergirl other than she exists and has the same basic powers. May know that they're cousins and stuff, probably does, but I don't know, it just seems like that's a little bit of a paradox or a conundrum right there that I'm curious if they ever deal with. Anyways, that's Part 2, The Triumph of the Superheroines from Adventure Comics 326. And finally, also from Adventure Comics 226, is The Legion Constitution Part 2. I was all set to say that this was the saving grace of the issue, and then I read through the couple of paragraphs. This is like a 1/3 of a page kind of a thing at the bottom, and these are honestly not the best parts of The Legion Constitution. There's a whole bit about absolute loyalty being required for all members, and another thing on the secrets of the Legion must be kept. If you violate that, it's grounds for expulsion. There's another thing on the failure of any member to live up to their requirements, such as loss of powers or cowardice or whatever, also grounds for expulsion, although worthy members losing their powers may retain Legionnaire Reserve status. And Legion Reserve, of course, have to be ready to go into action at any point. But then the last paragraph is, anyone expelled from the Legion and not retained as a reservist must submit to being hypnotically brainwashed to remove all Legion secrets from their memory. So, I mean, not the most uplifting parts of the Legion Constitution. It's like, here are all the downsides. So, kind of ironic that that was honestly a little bit of a letdown. I thought, man, that's a slam dunk. Just give us some decent parts of the Constitution, but not to be had. Not sure who wrote this, and I don't recall some of these things, like the whole brainwashing or whatnot, from past stories. That's not to say they weren't in there. Some of this, like having to salute the flag and some of these other things, were definitely in past stories. Once again, that's the Legion Constitution, Part 2, from Adventure Comics 326. Next up is Adventure Comics 327 in Part 1, The Lone Wolf Legionnaire, which is kind of a funny name, because at this point he's not a Legionnaire. This is written by Edmund Hamilton. We got John Forte on the art. This is from December 1964, and this is the first appearance, kind of, sort of, essentially, of one of my favorite Legionnaires. Now, we start with a character being sent to prison for having joined the Legion under false pretenses so he could sabotage the emergency board to further a crime plot or whatnot. And that's really all we get, kind of a panel or two of that on the first page after the, you know, two-thirds of the page is spent on an interior cover. And then we go to the Legion with their emergency board, and it's got all kinds of different planets on it, Brawl, Venus, Mars, etc. And there's a couple of emergencies. Krallak is having their moon explode, so Superboy and Mon-El have to go take care of that. Zoon has had a space crystal stolen, so Ultra Boy and Lightning Lad go after that. There's some problems at the interplanetary circus on Earth, so Lightlass and Brainiac 5 go after that. And Saturn Girl is basically playing, you know, traffic control. You here, you go there, kind of a deal. Quick aside on Lightlass. Her costume has a feather kind of design on it. This issue, last issue, it had like a cloud kind of a thing, so a very subtle change. I'm sure somebody thought, oh, well, what's an emblem for being light, you know, in terms of not weighing much, not a bright light kind of a difference. So, well, a cloud floats, we'll go with that. And somebody said, no, light is a feather, which is probably what led to this. I don't know the whole backstory on it, but again, kind of interesting. There's a difference in the costume there. We follow Lightlass and Brainiac 5 to the circus. The animals are going nuts, including the camel elephants. I think I pronounced that right. It's camel elephants kind of merged together. They're elephants with humps and no long trunks, which is kind of interesting. Anyways, they're all going nuts because there's a Morvian fear beast that sends telepathic things out to scare other animals. So it's like, we got to get these things out of here. But the camel elephants are starting to stampede, and this character comes out of nowhere on a rope, grabs one of the lights, and uses the spotlight to daze the chem elephants or whatever into no longer stampeding and such, saving the circus and whatnot. And it's funny, because he's got this huge spotlight. He's grabbed it by kind of the pole it was mounted on or whatever. And there's a line of dialogue indicating that this guy is super acrobatic because he's swinging from one rope to another while holding the spotlight. And I'm like, that would have been interesting to see. Anyways, we get introduced to this guy, Karth Arn, who goes by Lone Wolf. You can tell by the Lone Wolf emblem on his chest. He's a loner, of course. But Brainiac 5 and Lightlass are like, you've got super strength, you've got acrobatics, you should apply for membership. We're a little shorthanded. We could use a new member. He's like, nope, can't do it. He hears about the robberies on Zoon, and it's like, oh, well, that's odd, and kind of takes off. And he fits the description of the thief on Zoon, somebody with superpowers and such. So Saturn Girl sends a couple of more people off to Zoon to investigate, basically Sunboy, Brainiac 5, and Lightlass. So we follow them there, and Zoon, I'm really curious, I wish they would have done a diagram of the solar system here, because Zoon has three suns, one red, one yellow, one green. And the green is like their nighttime or whatever. And I'm like, this would wreak havoc with like a Kryptonian, where you've got powers sometimes, under the yellow sun, not under the red sun. I don't know that they ever established what would happen to a Kryptonian, or an Earthling for that matter, under a green sun. I know that there were issues in the Silver Age where they dealt with like blue suns and, you know, other things that give certain people powers under certain conditions and not others, whatever. That's an aside, but I am curious. I need to spend more time in DC Silver Age. It has some great stuff. Anyways, they see the footage of the theft. The thief rips this vault door off with his bare hands. It's like, oh, well, let's go check for fingerprints. He wasn't wearing gloves. They go there, blank. Got the finger marks, but no fingerprints. There are none. At this point, Lone Wolf's ship is getting to the planet Zoon. The Legion's right behind him. Lone Wolf sees this blue force ahead of him, and he's like, oh, I know who's using it to trap me. So he evades. The Legionnaires don't. They're getting pulled into some other dimension. Lone Wolf is afraid Lightlast may be there, so he knocks them off course by knocking his rocket into theirs, knocking pretty much everybody out except Lightlast. She realizes that he was trying to save them. He's unconscious but not hurt, and she's like, you know, what's going on? And he's like, oh, I can't be with you. I'm not human at all. End part one. And I kind of know what the twist is going to be here. Not so much because I've read the story, but because I've been enough fan of Timberwolf later that when they would talk about his past, the twist was mentioned because it was relevant and stuff. And it came up later when some other characters show up again. So I thought this was a bit of fun. And again, I like the Timberwolf character. And I don't know that Lone Wolf's going to get that name in the next part of the story or not, but down the line, he is a long-standing Legionnaire who is romantically involved with Lightlass over the years. So once again, that's part one, The Lone Wolf Legionnaire from Adventure Comics 327. Next up from Adventure Comics 327 is part two, The Youth Who Wasn't Human. Now we start with a two-thirds of a page interior cover where Lone Wolf is bemoaning that he'll never have a sweetheart, a family, friends, because he's not human. And then we get back to the story after that, and he's basically literally running away from Lightlast because he can't join the Legion. It would have been under false pretenses, and he's running super fast, not like super speed fast or super boy fast, but faster than she can keep up with. She explains to Brainiac 5 and Sun Boy what happened, and Brainiac 5's like, well, you know, that would explain the powers. He could be a lifelike robot. And he's like, nah, he seemed like living flesh or whatever. And he's like, well, then he could have been an android, because I guess that's the difference. You know, synthetic, artificial flesh, whatever. And we get a little bit of a flashback from Lone Wolf. You know, why do I have to be an android? You know, the woe is me. This is my lot in life. And meanwhile, Ultra Boy and Lightning Lad have been continuing their investigation and found out that an interdimensional penetrator was stolen. And again, robbery left blank fingerprints and stuff in the process. They realize that android or robot could have been involved. So Brainiac 5 has Saturn Girl look into that. And they use the information computer correlator that goes into action and spits out the, oh, well, there's this Dr. Mar Londo of the planet Zoon, who's known to have experimented with the creation of androids, and he died a little while ago. It feels like a conceptual predecessor to the Bat Computer from the 1966, you know, TV show, where they give it a little information, and it spits out the here's who done it or whatnot. But again, the information computer correlator, in 1964, kind of, computers were around. This even has a couple of reel-to-reel deals on it, and a couple of flashy lights and gauges and whatnot. It's always, I find, kind of hilarious as a somebody in the tech field to look at how computers were kind of envisioned, you know, 60-some-odd years ago. Anyways, they realize this Dr. Mar Londo could be where Lone Wolf is heading. So they head over there, they get there before Lone Wolf does, because, well, their ship can go faster than he can run, it's a little ways away, and they meet Bryn Londo, Dr. Londo's son. And he tells them all about this Karth Arn, the android, who's calling himself Lone Wolf, and that Dr. Londo created a bunch of androids to go find Zunium, Z-U-U-N-I-U-M, which is funny because the planet is Z-O-O-N, so why it's spelled differently, I don't know. But he's like, I can't get to this element because it's too dangerous for people to get to, but I can generate a ray that would give people powers based off it. So since I can't do it, I'll create an army of androids to go do it, and then sends them in with Karth Arn, the most intelligent of the androids, as their leader. And there's, I don't know, about a half dozen of them or whatnot. So they go into this cave, they hit this giant, looks like a centipede that basically trounces a bunch of them. They hit other dangers of, you know, rock falling, lava, and stuff like that. And they're actually, there's got to be more. I saw a half dozen go in, but they've lost at least three to the centipedes with another five to spare beyond Karth. They lose at least two to the lava and stuff like that, at least two to the falling rocks, still have two others. So, I mean, there's a fair number of them, and they've dropped like flies. The bottom line, the only android to survive was Karth. He got the Zunium, and it's like, the doctor's like, oh, you'll be like a son to me, and I'm going to use this to give humans some partial superpowers and whatnot. And, of course, clearly, Lone Wolf must be this android, and he's dangerous. We've got to do something about him. And by this point, he conveniently shows up, and right before he's about to get seriously harmed by the Legionnaires and by Bryn, Brainiac's like, release him, he's innocent. The one who calls himself Bryn Londo, he's the android. You know, he's got blank fingerprints, etc. And then Lone Wolf was like, but I'm an android, I've got no past, how come? Cue another flashback, because the android decides I might as well confess if you figured it all out. Bryn was the doctor's actual son. He only had enough Zunium to power one person, so he does it to his son. When the doctor dies shortly thereafter, the android uses a stun gun to give him amnesia, basically switches place with him and tells him that you're the android, I'm Bryn Londo, and then the son, thinking he's the android, runs off to somewhere he can pass as human. And Brainiac's like, well, yeah, we figured he wouldn't steal an interdimensional a penetrator and then use it on himself. That just doesn't make sense. So at the end of the story, Brainiac 5 has, and this is all in a caption on the last page, you know, later, after Brainiac 5's scientific skill has cured Lone Wolf's amnesia. I'm like, wow, that was quick. It's like, okay, you can enter the Legion now, Lone Wolf. And he's like, yes, but don't use that name anymore. I never want to be a Lone Wolf again. So at the end of this, it sure looks like he might be a Legionnaire. I mean, technically, it's you can enter, he's willing, they don't actually officially make him a member, but if I were reading this off the rack, I would certainly expect in the next appearance of the Legion, he could be a full-fledged Legionnaire at that point. I don't think that's the case. I think it takes a little while for him to actually become a Legionnaire, but we're in kind of that dark zone for me where I haven't read a lot of this era of the Legion. Most of my knowledge of this comes from flashbacks and other dialogue down the line from when I had been reading the Legion, which was only about 15 years after this, I guess, because Legion was one of the earlier things I got in. Anyways, Lone Wolf is the original guise of Bryn Londo, who becomes Timberwolf. Thought this was a ton of fun and really enjoyed it way better than the last issue, but low bar to trip over for that one. So once again, that's part two, The Youth Who Wasn't Human, from Adventure Comics 327. Next up is Superboy number 117 and Superboy and the Five Legion Traitors. Now, this is an 8-page story. We got Jerry Siegel doing the writing, Kurt Swan doing the art, which is always great. And this is December 1964. Now, the first page, about 2/3 of it, is spent with an interior cover. And the story starts out with Superboy in space, moving, changing the orbit of a world from one star to another because their star was gonna explode. And this was this is definitely an inhabited world. Why else would you do it? And it says it's inhabited. Anyways, he's done with that. He gets kind of shaken up by the supernova and stuff because he went back to kind of get a close-up of the space fireworks. He's invulnerable. It doesn't hurt him. Anyways, he heads back to Smallville, gets there, and in come the Legionnaires in their time globe. We've got Invisible Kid, Chameleon Boy, Brainiac 5, Element Lad, and Ultra Boy. They stop a couple of gangsters from stealing the payroll, because, of course, that's a good place to do it, of, you know, Smallville. And they were clearly, the Legionnaires are expected. I mean, the Legion flag is flying right there. So these guys are geniuses. And, of course, the Legion makes short work of them. And the Legionnaires are going to kind of go around town for a little bit, but the next day at school, they're there and they're going to demonstrate their powers. And the teacher requests that Brainiac 5 add up all the numbers in this math book. He gets some crazy total, and she's like, yep, my brother wrote the book, got the same total, but it took some weeks to do it. Now, I don't know why a math teacher would just randomly add all the numbers in a book like that together, even if it's a school book for math. It's kind of crazy, but, you know, mathematicians, what you gonna do? Invisible Kid shows off this ring that can project cities and stuff. Element Lad talks about this element that can restore health and whatnot. Ultra Boy decides to use his penetrative vision to reveal Superboy's secret identity. And Clark's like, I better think fast. And he realizes at this point something that had been kind of, I don't know if it had been bothering him or if he just now noticed it or whatever, but there were some spelling errors and some signs he'd noticed. And he realizes that nowhere in town is Smallville or Metropolis spelled correctly. Smallville has just the three L's instead of the four it ought to, two for small and two for Ville. And Metropolis has a U instead of an I for the Opolis part of it. And apparently in a recent Superboy story, I think in the previous issue, there was a Superboy from another world that came into his world, and he realizes, oh, there's an infinite number of dimensions. And we get this one panel where we see four worlds kind of superimposed on each other, almost like a vertical Venn diagram kind of a thing that's kind of cool. And then the other half of that panel is Chief Parker as Chief Parker, as a criminal, as an ape, as a woman, because, again, things can be different. And, of course, Superboy's thinking this at just light speed because, well, he's Kryptonian, he can. And he realizes that these are villainous legionnaires coming to expose Superboy's identity, but he's not the Superboy of this world. That one must be away on a mission, and it's like, spotting him with my supervision. If I act fast, I can save his secret identity. Using his super breath, he kicks the lights out for a second. There's a storm nearby. Nobody thinks that's odd. He has this medal he was given recently. It's nowhere to be seen in the story prior to this, so kind of convenient, but okay. He heats it with his heat vision, uses a hairpin that comes out of nowhere to etch a message on it, and then chucks it out the window at super speed towards this world's Superboy, and uses his super breath to flip the light switch again. And right as Superboy is saying Clark Kent is secretly Superboy, in flies Superboy. And Superboy uses this anti-gravity paralysis disc, gosh, that's a handy device, to put these legionnaires, or would-be legionnaires, in a suspended animation thing, and carts them off. Now, Superboy of that world is still holding this thing up like a waiter would hold a tray of drinks or whatever and stuff. He's just got these guys floating above him. When he sees kind of our Superboy, and it's like, well, how did you know they weren't real? It's like, oh, they didn't salute the flag. I noticed the misspellings. So our Superboy offers to fly the still paralyzed villains through the time barrier so they can be imprisoned in their own time. He does that, heads out, and flies through the time stream across the dimensional barrier into his own time and world, landing and seeing, you know, Smallville with the proper number of L's and stuff, with kind of a aren't parallel worlds wacky kind of a thing. And he's got this thought balloon in that final panel where, I mean, there's three, really. One of the text of it's great to be back home. One with the legionnaires that we just encountered, and another thought balloon with the legionnaires with their flight belts and stuff like that. And the differences in costumes are completely lost on me, if there are any, other than the flight belts. And in this one, they were all wearing the flight belts, so I guess that's the villainous group. Although, honestly, I would have said those are the real ones. Anyways, technically, other than the final panel, were five of these legionnaires that Superboy's thinking about, although I could debate which five are really the legionnaires and which five are not. Anyways, that's the only appearance of legionnaires in this story whatsoever. So again, I'm including it on a technicality. It was definitely billed as a Superboy in the Legion story, even though the Legion is only thought about and never actually present in the story. Still not a bad story. It's another these Legionnaires aren't the people you think they are kind of a deal, but still kind of fun. Anyways, That's Superboy and the Five Legion Traitors from Superboy number 117. Next up from Action Comics 319 is The Super Cheat. Now, this is a Supergirl story. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because the Legion involvement is just kind of a little bit there at the end. The basic story is Linda is having Supergirl's secret identity. Linda Lee Danvers is having a little bit of friction with another student, Donna, who is, I guess, jealous of Supergirl and Linda Lee taking attention away from her. She used to be a big deal here, what have you. We get a little bit at the start of how this girl is cheating. She's got these earrings that have a really, really tiny reel-to-reel recorder in them, which, again, great for micronization or whatever, but and we'd even seen a little bit where she was doing the recording earlier and stuff, but the size of this thing, even by today's standards, because again, it's a physical reel-to-reel. Anyways, again, the way they portrayed technology back then and where it could go, just kind of funny. But we get some back and forth in all of this, and it's a decent length story. It's about 12 pages, and the Legion involvement doesn't come in until the 11th page, when this girl is basically confessing that she framed Linda for some stuff over the PA system. And the reason it's over the PA system, because the whole thing is just kind of ridiculous. It's like, well, how did you get her to broadcast her scheme over the stadium amplifier? It's like, well, Shrinking Violet here can explain. It's like, oh, she's a member of the Legion who can shrink at will, because again, they're all known so well. We get a flashback, which is also a flash forward. It's a flashback to Linda Lee saying, hey, I know she's framing me, but I'll need Shrinking Violet's help. But of course, Shrinking Violet's in the future, so it's a flash forward, so that's just kind of funny. She came back to the Supergirl's era in a time capsule, it's time sphere, time globe, whatever they want to call it today, shrinks down, gets into the earrings, and is able to rewire this electronic circuiting using her advanced 30th century technology and knowledge to where it'd be a radio transmitter tuned to the PA system at the stadium. And then we get a little thing of Shrinking Violet going back to the future with a, you can read more of the adventures of Shrinking Violet and the Legion over in Adventure Comics. It was a nothing appearance, and it was a kind of a deus ex machina, somebody else comes in to solve the story kind of a deal, which I always find a little bit of a cheat and stuff like that. But Shrinking Violet does show up here. I did want to include it. I just didn't think it's overly germane to the Legion continuity and stuff in general, so I didn't want to spend too much time on it. So, we've got Jim Mooney on the art. I couldn't figure out who wrote this, and I'm okay with that. I don't know that I'd have put my name on it. It's not a bad story. I just, it was more teen melodrama at the school than I was particularly caring for. Anyways, that's The Super Cheat from Action Comics 319. And that gets us through all of 1964. So, next episode, we'll start back up with Legion of Superhero Adventures from 1965.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.